Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the former chair of the New York Film Critics Circle and National Society of Film Critics, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic, and guide to all things cinematic. He joins us weekly the films Pillion, Mistress Dispeller, and I'm Chevy Chase, and you're not.
I wasn't all that enthusiastic about going to see the new movie called Pillion, because it's about a subject that does not especially interest me. It's about a couple of men who get into a kind of a dominance and submission relationship. There's a lot of gay cinema and queer cinema around these days, and this is a particular area of that that, again, does not particularly interest me. But my gosh, Pillion turned out to be a pretty darn good movie, and I'm very impressed with it. It was directed and co-written, actually written, although it's based on a novel, by a guy named Harry Lytton, who is a pretty new filmmaker. This is his first feature. And it stars Harry Mellon and Alexander Skarsgård. And Skarsgård, by the way, is the son of the very great actor Stellan Skarsgård. And he's quite good in this movie. All the acting is quite good in this movie. And they play a couple of characters. One of them is named Colin, and the other one is named Ray. Colin has an interesting profession that we don't see much of in the movie nowadays. He sings in a sort of a barbershop quartet. And the movie begins and ends with Colin singing with his quartet, and they're singing old-fashioned harmonies and all that. That was a kind of a nostalgic thing for me to see. I found that kind of sweet. But he gets sort of picked up by somebody who is at this bar where he is singing his songs. And the guy who picks him up is a guy named Ray. And the thing is that Ray is a very, very tall and handsome guy. People keep commenting accurately on how good looking he is. Colin, on the other hand, is kind of nerdy. He's a littler guy, and he doesn't have conventional handsomeness. But Colin gets picked up by Ray, and it turns out that Colin has, and he says this himself more than once in the movie, he has an aptitude for devotion. He just loves having some partner who he can just serve. Be the doting servant of. And he immediately turns into this with Ray. Of course, they're having sex from time to time, and a little bit of it looks sort of rough and sort of, you know, bondage type stuff. But there's not a whole lot of that in the movie. Mostly we have the relationship between these two, and we have Colin having a nice time doing everything. He has to shop for the food. He has to cook the food. He has to do everything. He has to be the servant. He has to serve Ray's every need, every desire, every wish. And he does that willingly and appears to enjoy it. Then a little bit of tension enters into their relationship. Colin, every once in a while, would like, for example, to sleep in Ray's bed. But no. He has to sleep on the floor. Colin would like to have a day off every once in a while. No, Ray says. You can't have a day off every once in a while. But then they kind of come to terms on this a little bit. Ray softens up a little bit. Colin reduces his demands a little bit, and they get along okay. So most of this movie is this very interesting kind of relationship story. But there's another dimension to it, which I really liked, and that is that Colin has parents. Ray is a mysterious figure. We never find out much about him. But Colin has a mother and a father. The mother is sick, quite sick. In fact, she's apparently going to die soon, although she can still get around the house and do things. And the father is just this nice fellow. And they want to meet Ray and get to know him a bit. And it takes a while for that to happen because Ray is very resistant. Eventually, it does happen. And there's a dinner party scene, which is just a really nightmarish dinner party. They do not get along, especially the mother and Ray do not get along. But then that's over and we get back to the story in general. And I won't give too much in the way of spoilers here, but eventually Ray sort of disappears. And during the time when he's gone, Colin's father, who is a very nice guy, actually drives Colin around looking for Ray. The parents of Colin are very, very accepting of his homosexuality and of this relationship, although they don't much trust Ray. But they, you know, absolutely no kind of homophobia or anything like that. And I found that very, very refreshing. So again, Pillion. It's named after the seat on a motorcycle because Ray has a motorcycle. That's a big part of his identity. He's a biker. But mainly what we have here, of course, it is a queer love story, but it's also, I just think, very much a relationship movie. And I really, really like the way that Colin's parents become important parts of the story. They're interesting characters, and their relationship with both their son and with Ray, the mysterious Ray, is very, very nicely drawn. So again, it's a really good movie. And I'll mention again the name of the director, Harry Lytton. He's a good director, at least judging from this movie, his first feature. And I certainly hope that he has more movies to make in time to come because he's a good director and he knows what he's doing. Now, I would like to talk about a documentary, and we're back to relationships here because this is a very unconventional documentary. It's actually an American movie, but it takes place in China and it's all about a very Chinese subject. It was directed by Elizabeth Lowe. Her previous movie was a movie called Stray, which is a documentary about stray dogs in a big city in Turkey. It's very observational. It doesn't really suck us into a storyline. It just kind of gives us a portrait of these different dogs and how they manage to survive and what happens to them. And it's a very, very interesting documentary about an unusual subject, stray dogs. Well, Mistress Dispeller is about real human beings, but it's also very observational. It's very quiet. It's very slow. It develops in a very gradual way. But I found it pretty darn interesting to watch almost all of the way through. Now, here is what a Mistress Dispeller is. It turns out, according to this movie, and I believe the movie is probably accurate about this, it turns out that in China, if you think that your spouse is cheating on you, you can hire a person. And if you're a man, this would be a woman who is going to get rid of the mistress. Somehow, the straying spouse. To maybe come back to the marriage with full commitment again. So the idea is that, okay, you're a married couple. Let's just talk about here, because this is the situation in the movie, that there is a woman who starts to suspect that her husband has a mistress, is having an extramarital affair. And so the wife who is being cheated on hires a mistress dispeller to see if the mistress dispeller can get rid of the mistress and somehow bring the marriage back to a more grounded, more conventional kind of a setup. So that's what a mistress dispeller is. It is somebody who is hired to get rid of a mistress in one way or another. And that's what happens in this documentary. We have a woman who finds out that her husband is apparently cheating on her. And so she hires a mistress dispeller. And it turns out that, yes, there is a mistress. She lives in another city. She's a lot younger than the wife herself. And the mistress dispeller says, okay, I will help you try to get your husband away from this mistress, to get this mistress to go away and somehow keep the marriage going. And we'll just see how that works out. So this woman is being paid to do this. Now, the big thing that was in my mind as I watched this movie was, how did this movie manage to get made? What couple, married couple, and these two have been married for a long, long time, what married couple is going to invite this other person, this mistress dispeller, into their lives with cameras? And then on top of that, somehow get the mistress to also be into the movie with cameras and sound recording and all that. How do you possibly arrange this? Well, apparently, what happened was that the filmmaker, Elizabeth Lowe, managed to do this by persuading the people involved that she was actually just making a documentary about modern love in China. And they agreed to do this, to have the cameras and the interviews and so forth and so on take place in their home. There isn't much in the way of interviewing in this movie, by the way. It's mainly just the camera and the sound recording observing the three principals, who are the married couple and the mistress, and of course, the mistress dispeller. But apparently, the filmmaker managed to persuade them that it was just a documentary about things that happen in modern love in China, and then things went on from there. There's a text at the beginning of the documentary that says that all the participants agreed to this. They agreed to it at the beginning of the movie. They agreed to it again at the end of the movie, and the filmmaker was prepared to reconfigure the movie in various ways if people didn't like it. And what they eventually came out with is the movie that we are seeing now. Now, the thing is, there's a real, I think, ethical problem here because there was a lot of lying. involved, apparently, as I understand it. This is the information I've gotten, that they had to tell the people the documentary was really about a slightly different subject, and they didn't really realize what was going on here. That said, the movie is very intimate in the way that it records these people. I don't mean intimate in the sense of seeing things you shouldn't see, but the people talk very, very frankly. And what we have is, among other things, the mistress dispeller telling a lot of lies. Telling the mistress, for example, lies about who she is and what she's doing. They pretend that she's a relative of the family and so forth and so on, so that the mistress will talk to her. So there's a lot of duplicity and fabrication that goes on. But that said, apparently these things are things that really go on in China. Apparently the mistress dispeller is a real profession, and there are people who do it for a living. And this movie certainly has revealing things to show and say about that. Again, it's a very quiet, slow-moving documentary with just a lot of people talking and looking into the cameras and so forth. But it's pretty interesting, and it certainly opened my eyes to an aspect of modern culture, and particularly Chinese modern culture, that I was really not aware of at all. So Mistress Dispeller, it's streaming, you can see it. Interesting subject, fairly interesting movie. And finally, one more documentary. It is called I'm Chevy Chase and You're Not, directed by Marina Zenovich, who apparently likes to take on challenging and difficult subjects for her films. And Chevy Chase is apparently one of those. Now, Chevy Chase, of course, maybe some younger people aren't familiar with him. He was a real mainstay of the old Saturday Night Live, a very, very well-known comedian. He also did a lot of movies, comic movies, including the National Lampoon movies, and was very, very famous as a comic and a comic actor for a long time. Apparently, he was not much good at stand-up comedy. There's a little bit of that in the movie, and yep, he does not appear to have been very good at that, but he was a very, very talented and gifted comic actor. So this is a movie that just sort of delves into his life and his history and his friends and his colleagues and his shows and all of that. And he does turn out to be, shall we say, a pretty edgy person. There are times when the filmmaker seems to be having a lot of trouble with him, and there are times when Chevy Chase really is just difficult. He apparently did not get along with some of the people he worked with very closely. He gave a hard time to his agents, to his producers, to his fellow performers, and so forth. And all of that comes out in the movie. That said, this is not a movie of, you know, a couple of hours of just nonstop unpleasantness. No, no, no. He cooperates. He talks to the camera. He says a lot of things. Sometimes his language is pretty foul, but he's fairly revealing about himself in various ways. And we certainly do have a lot of other people who he has worked with come into the movie and talk. They're talking heads, and they talk about him, and they talk about their own work. So you have people like the great TV producer Lorne Michaels. You have performers like Dan Aykroyd and Martin Short. Interestingly, Steve Martin never shows up at all, and apparently he would not participate in it. And one would be curious to find out whether that was because he just didn't like Chevy Chase, which would be understandable, or whether it was just because it was a project he didn't want to get involved with. In any case, I was hoping to see Steve Martin, and I didn't. And there's some other people who just did not want to appear or did not end up appearing in this movie. That said, it's a pretty interesting portrait of Chevy Chase. And it's one of these movies where somebody who always comes across as a likable person in movies and TV, because after all, he's a comic. He wants to make people laugh. He wants to make people like him and be on his side and all of that. It turns out to be in real life, a really, really complicated and in some ways difficult person, and is willing to reveal that in various ways. And it's just interesting to see that. I came away with kind of a mixed picture of Chevy Chase. He's never been a performer who has interested me in any sort of deep way. I've just found him an engaging performer. And in some of his movies, some of the National Lampoon stuff, for example, he's always been very entertaining to watch. And it's a little bit interesting to find out a little bit about his personal life and to find out that a lot of people found him difficult and kind of hard guy to deal with and stuff like that. It's not a great documentary by any means. Other performer documentaries I've looked at in recent times are either better or worse than this. I would put this in the middle of the road. There's a movie right now called Senior, for example, which is about Robert Downey Jr. and his father, Robert Downey, who was a sort of underground filmmaker for a long time, and it's pretty bad. It's really pretty boring and very sentimental, and I didn't much like it. On the other hand, the recent documentary about Pee-wee Herman, Paul Rubens, is absolutely fascinating. I would put the Chevy Chase one sort of in between, about on a level with the Mel Brooks documentary that's around right now, too. These are movies that reveal interesting things about their main characters, that tell us things about their careers and help us know more about them, but without managing to be, let's say, really interesting movies in their own right. So I'm Chevy Chase and You're Not is a good documentary, but just sort of so-so most of the way through, occasional flashes of real interest. So I would say, watch I'm Chevy Chase and You're Not if you're interested in Chevy Chase. If you're not interested in him, probably this movie isn't going to get you interested in him. So that's my kind of middle-of-the-road review of that movie, and that's my kind of middle-of-the-road story this week.
For which we thank you, as always, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. The films Pillion, Mistress Dispeller, and I'm Chevy Chase, and You're Not.
Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.